G'day, this is Big Brody Marshall.
This is Brian Alvarez.
This is Dean Brady of the Millennials.
This is the Jurassic Punk Sid Parker.
How many of you guys have heard the term kid bait?
Loonoggers! This is Jay Hunter from OSW Review.
This is Mac Grim Basso.
This is the loosest in Australian wrestling, Adam Brooks.
This is Scrap Brand Adam Pearce, and you are locked in
to Wrestle Radio Australia.
Welcome, everyone, to Australia's longest-running Australian wrestling podcast, Wrestle Radio Australia. I'm your host, Todd Eastman. Hope you all had a socially distant Easter, or as good an Easter as you possibly could have had under these terrible circumstances that we're all going through at the moment. But we all soldier on through. And I learned a few things this week. I learned don't try and open yourself up to debates, because that's apparently people don't take when you pose a question as a debate. I think they think that you're taking a certain side, and so they get awfully stroppy. Second one that I learned is the block button. Amazing. I think I'm going to use it more often with people, because just don't need that negativity all the time. Especially when I don't mind if you're having a debate and you're being actually putting forward some thought in your argument, but if you're just going to be out there and be an idiot and then call people names and that sort of stuff, that's childish. That's 6-year-old stuff. And I don't really need that in my life at the moment, to be honest with you. So the old Blocksky came out for a person or two. So, but made for a good week for me. And, the third thing, well, not that I learned, but the third thing that happened this week that was terrible, and that this isn't just the WWE cuts, which were terrible, but Howard Finkel passing the Fink. For me, because I'm a little bit older, so I grew up listening to the Fink announce all the big matches for me, watching WWF on VHS, kids, as before they came out with CDs and before you could stream things. There were things called VHSs. And the Fink was the voice of pretty much all of those VHSs. So, big thanks to Howard Finkel for what he did in the wrestling industry worldwide. And you will be missed, sir. You will be missed. My guest for this week, though, Jensen Hunt, is a guy you might have heard of a lot. He wrestles in Adelaide for Riot City Wrestling and for PWSA. But really good guy, really interesting character, really interesting gimmick, which I wanted to get him on to talk about. And also has a great collection of WWE and then TNA and NWA titles. So thought I'd get on, we'd talk about that, talk about how much, what he likes about those titles. And also he has a lot to do with helping kids talking through stuff. And, you know, that's something we're big here on in WRA. So I thought I would talk to him about that as well. So that is right now here on Wrestle Road Australia. Jensen Hunt, thank you for joining me tonight, mate.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me.
Very welcome. Just whole new sort of thing we're doing here with the video. So, it's really good to have you on. And the bonus about having this sort of medium now is we can actually talk about stuff that I wanted to talk to you about, because not only are you a wrestler, you also have a pretty good belt collection yourself.
Absolutely. It's probably my pride and joy collection.
Yes. This is why I'm wearing the
million dollar belt.
It was for you. Normally I would wear a like indie wrestler's shirt just to try and promote them, but this is a special thing. So I thought I'll break out the million-dollar belt tonight. Well, let's get into you. Let's get into you first. When you started training pretty late, what made you decide to get into the actual wrestling part of professional wrestling, not just be a fan anymore?
So, obviously always been a fan. It's been a huge part of my life from since I was about 6 years old. And I guess it was just that sort of right place, right time for me personally. Had been through a few things and decided that, you know, I wanted to do it, because you hear all these people all the time that go like, what if I tried and, you know, could have done something and I never did. And I didn't want to have that regret. So thought, you know what, stuff it. I'm going to try out with RCW. Somehow my unfit, fat ass got through the tryout. I will give the credit where credit's due. Tyler Daniels giving me a bit of encouragement in that tryout. But yeah, and then since then, it's just, you know, gone from strength to strength for me.
Beautiful, yeah. And tell me, because when I first saw photos of you, I messaged Wolfie at the time because Wolfie was commentating. And I was like, who's the dude wearing the Jerry Lawler gimmick? And he did. He actually put you over. So he really does dig the gimmick. Just explain to people that haven't seen Riot City, and if you haven't, I don't know why you haven't, the character of Jensen Hunt.
So Jensen Hunt is a 80s playboy millionaire, essentially. The original gimmick started out as being a thumb wrestling champion. That kind of fell a bit by the wayside as I sort of developed the gimmick a little bit more. Takes a lot of inspiration from what I grew up watching, which was that sort of 80s to mid 90s wrestling. And that was the stuff that for me, I just love. Mm-hmm. And then sort of looking at an outfit, you know, my outfit, my gear, and sort of looking at what everybody else was wearing. And I kind of just liked the Jerry Lawler look. Sort of threw it past a few people and sort of went through a few iterations. And all of a sudden, that's what we came up with. And the greatest thing about it is I don't have to shave my chest hair because it's all part of the gimmick.
Yes, yes. I just love the one because no one does it. No one does that one strap at all anymore.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it is, like, I mean, I've got the long black tights and the black boots, and I'm getting a few more tights made, and I've got somebody that makes up my singlets. And the cool thing about it is you can just chop and change. So you can just keep your look fresh, and if somebody's wearing a clashing type outfit, it's okay, cool. I've got, you know, currently I've got four other singlets that I can wear. So if you're wearing red, okay, well, I won't wear my red one, I'll wear my yellow one. I've got an away strip.
That's the one thing I must admit I don't like is when I see guys in matches and they're basically wearing the exact same sort of tights. I'm like, if you saw, you take more than one piece of gear, and if you see someone wear it, the guy's wearing that, you go, well, I'll change it up so I'd look different to him. Because otherwise it just looks like,
yeah,
say, the Japanese young boys having a match.
That's it. And I mean, I put a lot of that to, obviously, the guys in RCW. They really sort of, you know, they don't just let you go, you know, hell for leather and like, all right, off you go, spend hundreds or whatever dollars on stuff. And then you come back and we go, okay. You know, they really want you to come up with your own stuff and then them to give you feedback. And it's a lot of give and take and give and take and give and take until, you know, and I tell that to anybody now that's getting ready to debut, just throw 10,000 things against the wall and see what sticks. And then what sticks, it's like, all right, cool. I'm going to take that. And then I'm going to throw it against the wall again and see from making it stronger, what's still sticking. And then eventually you get that nice little package, which for me is now Jensen Hunt.
Yeah, see, that's one thing that I used to love about Adelaide, and what I don't so much like about being up here is that some guys will just go out and say, well, this is my gimmick and here's all my gear. And I'll look at it and I'll go, well, I don't know how to book that. I don't really do you know what I mean? It's just the way that they do it in Adelaide, yeah. It is, because I know from personal experience, it's a collaborative effort. And that way, you've got the whole team behind you when you eventually do debut.
And that's going to make it. And that's the thing.
It's got to make it a lot easier for you as well that way, surely.
Exactly. You're not having to, you're coming up with crazy, stupid ideas. One of my very first gimmick names was Jack Action, which was just ridiculous. But you know, you sort of throw it past a few people and they're like, oh yeah, it's kind of funny, but is it longevity wise sort of thing? And you go like, yep, cool. all right, throw that to the wayside. And then you sort of just bounce things off different people, and everyone's got different tastes and different ideas, but you eventually sort of cultivate this idea. And the more you sort of do that, and I mean, obviously when you're getting ready to debut, you know, I'd never wrestled in front of a crowd before. I'd never wrestled in front of, you know, people before. But guys like, you know, Matty Cree, Zach Sabbath, Big Brody Marshall, you know, Rocky, you know, Tyler Dan, so many people, you know, I'm not going to be able to name them all, who have done that, give you what they know works. Mm. And, you know, you can use that information. And that's the beautiful thing about RCW is there's that real family respect thing of like the people that have come before you, you do listen to them. And while you want to come up with your own ideas and your own things, and they encourage it, and they encourage you to go try it, see what happens. If it works, sweet. If it doesn't, all right, back to the drawing board. But they really encourage you to do that. You know, you do sometimes get some peculiar looks. It's like, hey, I'm thinking of doing this. And you get the, okay.
or the Matty.
And, you know, the Matty.
Yeah. I've gotten that one a few times.
And you do get, but it's great. And, you know, and Matty's the first one that will admit that, you know, if something does work, he'll be like, good on you. And if it doesn't work, it's like, sweet. And he'll help you to figure out how to make it work, you know, how you can tweak it and stuff like that. And, you know, Matty, for me, you know, being a big guy himself, has helped me a lot. And Luke as well helped me a lot with a lot of my big man stuff. You know, I'm 6'4" and 115 kilos. So, you know, they've helped me a lot with that sort of bigger, you know, how to sort of present myself in the ring type of thing.
Mm-hmm. One of because I'd never really seen you even wrestle before, I was already a fan of your stuff through your memes on Instagram. What made you come up with that idea? If you haven't seen, I'll try and find a couple and I'll flash them up while we're talking about this now. But just where did you come up with the idea of just doing that sort of gimmick or gear?
I can't really remember. I think it was purely the fact that I have a book which my mum got me for my birthday years ago, and it's just called A Book of Great One-Liners. And it's great one-liners throughout history, like different historical people have said these things. And I remember I would use that book a lot of the times in promos. So I would use it to have a funny little one-liner when I was cutting a promo, and you know, I would highlight ones that I felt fit the character or a certain narrative. And from there, it kind of just became, well, why don't I just do these? You know, because you're not wrestling every weekend, you're not wrestling every day, obviously, in Australia. So what's something I can do and put on social media and on Instagram that just might get a cheap laugh or two, might get people talking about my character? And I just came up with that. And one of the greatest compliments I got was Royce Chambers came over to do a show for us, and because I started printing them out and selling them as merch.
Good. Very good.
Genius idea. So selling them for $2 and, you know, and Royce Chambers saw one of them. And I think it was when life gives you melons, you might be dyslexic. And he just lost it. Royce Chambers absolutely lost it and took a photo of it. And that's when I knew, all right, I've got something here. Yeah. So yeah. And it was just a nice little thing. I thought, you know what? It's going to be a bit of fun. I started running out of clever things to say, so I kind of like fell off a little bit. But yeah, it was just a nice, cool, just little side thing that I thought, it just gets me out there, pops me a little bit. If somebody sees it and likes me, then hey, that's one more person that knows my brand, I suppose.
Yeah. How do you go with because you'd be a face in RCW, wouldn't you? Because you tag up with
Hit Condor.
There we go. That's the name. Thank you. You'd be facing there, but then you're a heel over in PWSA. How do you find that changing up between styles works for you?
It's very interesting. My actual style of wrestling tends to be very much the same. Like my moves are very much the same. My sequences are very much the same. What tends to change is my demeanor or my energy. So wrestling for PWSA, for instance, as a heel, I'll be a lot slower, a lot more methodical. I still do a lot of comedy, you know, like spots, sort of like the Ric Flair, Chris Jericho-esque style stuff where you're begging off and all of those sorts of things. But it'll be a lot slower, a lot more methodical in my spots, a lot more sort of trying to antagonize the crowd and talk about how great I am, which is very easy for me to do. Whereas in RCW teaming as a face, my style tends to be a lot more high impact, high intensity, a lot of that sort of stuff where, you know, I, you know, sort of come out the gate and we had a, Kit and I had a match, last RCW match before everything happened. And we're against the Pariah. And yeah, it was just a lot of that real high intensity sort of stuff. And just really like sort of, you know, bull at a gate and taking them out, taking them out, taking them out. Again, being the bigger guy against two guys that, you know, whilst they're big guys themselves, you know, next to me, you know, they, you know, the whole perception is they're smaller. You know, and so using that sort of strength and power, but using it in intense mode rather than in PWSA, I use that strength and power in more of a methodical, you know, and, you know, one of the greatest things I've ever seen was, you know, JBL, who's an influence of mine, being a bully. So, you know, he's a big dude, he's a big burly dude, but he would kick dudes in the shin and he would step on their hair and, you know, he'd slap them. So it was just, he was more of a bully than just using what he actually had, which was his size. He would just, you know, be an asshole basically. And yeah, and that's sort of like that inspiration, that Jerry Lawler, JBL as well, that a lot of that in-ring stuff has come a lot from them.
Which do you enjoy more?
I do enjoy a heel. I do enjoy being a heel. I feel me as a person, I'm a heel just in my personal life. I'm one of those people that has a slow filter. So somebody will say something and I'll have a very witty comeback, but I probably shouldn't say it because my filter just kicks in about a minute too late.
Yeah. I know the feeling.
So I do enjoy being a heel. Being a face is great because I feel that everybody should have a good, like, little run as both anyway, because you learn the different sides of the coin, I suppose, by being face and heel. I've just happened to have my education happen at the same time, just with two different companies. So, but I do, yeah, do prefer a nice heel run.
I think, like, nowadays, I think it's harder to be a face than it is a heel. It's a lot easier. Well, for me anyway, I find it a lot easier to piss someone off than I am to actually have someone be my friend.
Absolutely. And, like, you hear it all the time. Like, it is so much easier to get someone to hate you than it is to get someone to like you. To get someone to like you, you've got to be doing 10 times more work than what you do to just turn around and call someone an idiot. And, you know, they turn around and, oh, boo, I don't like you anymore because you call me an idiot. Whereas, you know, you're trying to get the fans behind you and stuff like that. And it's just like, yeah. So, but again, we do have guys that are absolutely fantastic at it. So,
yes.
Credit to them.
Yes. Let's move away from your wrestling, or move to your belt collection, because it's something I am very envious of at the moment. How many titles do you have at the moment?
Currently I have 10.
So jealous.
All of them are the, like, proper authentic replicas, so metal plates, leather straps, the whole nine yards. None of the plastic crap. That's, you know, that's kid stuff.
Oh, making friends. when did you start collecting these? Was it before you started with? Did you already sort of have these before you moved into actually wrestling, or was it something you've sort of, once you started training, you started getting more into the wrestling, you started buying them from there, or?
Yeah, no, so I started buying these. I had pretty much most of the collection before I started wrestling. It was just more of a fandom thing than anything, where I just happened to be scrolling along eBay one day, and the very first belt I ever bought was the WWF European title, and it's an actual WWF scratch logo European title, and that was amazing. Like, you know, and I was like, you know, it was one of my favorite titles as a kid growing up, like just the wrestlers that held it. And I know, and you know, I did a thing on it with my Instagram. I know it kind of fell by the wayside in later years, but so many of the wrestlers that I loved as a kid growing up, you know, Triple H, Owen Hart, you know, British Bulldog, Shawn Michaels, Jericho, Guerrero, all of those guys held that belt. So I was like, I've got to have this. You know, I just need this in my life. And it wasn't much money, I suppose, in terms of, you know, relative scheme of things. And so I thought, oh, I've got to have this. And then from there, it kind of just became a bit of an addiction, where I just kept on buying them. And I kept on going on eBay and kept on having a look and seeing what was available. And yeah, just kept on buying more and more and more until now I've got 10.
Jeez. So that was your first one, the European. Did that sort of started it for you? That was like, I need to get more. I need to get a collection going.
Yeah, it was sort of, I kept seeing different ones come up, and certain ones I just wasn't interested in. Like, for me, it needed to also be kind of personal. Like, there needed to be some sort of connection, whether it had been a match or a wrestler that had meant something to me. So there were certain belts that came up. For instance, like, I saw a hardcore title belt, and I was like, yeah, it's cool, but I'm not going to spend, you know, $300 on it.
No, it's a Winged Eagle belt that got smashed, really.
Exactly, yeah. And I've got a Winged Eagle belt, so I was like, well, I kind of have both. I just put a piece of duct tape over it and write hardcore, and there we go, I've got a hardcore belt. So, yeah, needed to have, like, a certain amount of significance to me. But, yeah, as I started just seeing them crop up, and like I said, you know, anybody that's listening to this that wants to start collecting belts, I encourage you, like, just go on eBay, go on any of those sorts of sites, you'll find some bargains, absolute bargains, every so often. And, you know, there might be a ding here, a scratch there and whatnot, but yeah, and that's just how I built this awesome collection. So
Which ones, because I know for me, like, there's like three belts that I would really love. It's the original NWA belt, the one that like Ric Flair had, the original one.
Yep.
Adam Pearce ended up having it later on, that sort of that one. Well, I guess it's the one that the NWA use now, isn't it? So that one.
Yeah.
The original big gold with the Ric Flair nameplate was in like filigree.
Yep.
That not just the normal ones. I want the original without the WWF. I want the original with the Ric Flair filigree and the Winged Eagle belt, which I know you have.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I've got the World Heavyweight title. It does have the WWE logo on it, but yeah, I do have that. I do have the 10 pounds of gold NWA belt. So that's... that's definitely one of my absolute favorites. Again, that one became a bit more of a favorite as I got a bit older. And again, as I got a bit older, I started going back into wrestling history and I started watching some of these old matches and just some of the stuff that they were doing then. And I was just like, wow, this is like, even today, like 2020 and some of the stuff they were doing in the early 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, early 90s stands up today, in my personal belief. Mm. The Winged Eagle belt, I think, and I've said this before, out of the WWE titles is the WWE championship.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a single fan in the world that if WWE decided to bring that belt design back would go, oh, no, can't you bring back the spinner? Like, gosh darn.
I remember being mad when Austin got rid of it for the big round belt. I've never liked that belt. I think the main reason I didn't like it is because it took the place of the Winged Eagle belt.
Again, and I feel the exact same way. Like, it wasn't a bad-looking belt, and I've had the opportunity to buy that belt two or three times, and I'm still yet to buy it because, again, I'm just like... And again, like, that belt for me, you know, I look at the history of who held that belt, and it was the very first title that The Rock held, and my absolute favorite wrestler, you know, sue me for it if you want, Triple H, that was his first world championship. And so I'm like, there is something about that belt that I love, but at the same time, in comparison to everything else that I've collected, it just doesn't. I keep looking over at my collection as I'm talking to. it just, yeah, like the Winged Eagle belt for me was just, that was it in a bit. Like, that was my childhood. That was my childhood, that world title.
Yeah. Yeah, because you are a little bit older, so you would have been, so what was the first event that you sort of watched?
So I actually know the very first match, and this is why I'm a Triple H fan. So very first match I ever watched, and you would probably, you know, you would remember that, you know, Channel 9 used to have old replays of Raw and all of that stuff on like Saturday nights, sort of late. And I remember a friend of mine was into wrestling and had told me about it, and I've got to get into it and I've got to watch it. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, being a 6 year old, I was like, absolutely, I'll jump into this world of wrestling. And very first, and I remember he wore a horrible Hawthorn striped Butcher. So it was brown and yellow striped Butcher. And in his debut match for the World Wrestling Federation was Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And I'm watching, and Hunter Hearst Helmsley comes out and he has the match and he wins. And I was like, oh, that guy's kind of cool. Like, he's a bit arrogant, and, you know, he looks cool and all that sort of stuff. I remember asking my mum, like, what's a debut? My mum's like, oh, that means it's his first time. Like, wow. His first time and he won. Like, oh my God. And I became a Triple H fan ever from that moment. Outside of that, like, I was kind of in and out for a little bit. And then a mate of mine, again, would have been 7, got the VHS. How archaic. Kids, a VHS is a videotape.
Right. I used to work in a video store.
Is that right? Yeah, VHS of WrestleMania 12. And went around to his house, watched WrestleMania 12. And from there, that was it for me. And I started collecting tapes wherever I could, watching whatever was on whenever I could. You know, I grew up in the country. We couldn't get Foxtel until like the mid 2000s. Like, you know, so for me, it was just scrounging and scraping to get any sort of content. And a lot of the content I could get was that 1990 to sort of 96, 97. That was a lot of what I could get my hands on because it was a bit older by that point. And I just delved in, and that was just any chance I could get was just watching wrestling, fantasizing about wrestling, having my figurines and having my own wrestling federation, and, you know, making paper championships for my figurines and stuff. Like, it just became an obsession, basically.
Yeah, I remember because I'm a bit older. When I worked in the video store, I used to have a guy that came in, and he would record Nitro and Raw for me off like TNT and Fox Sports, and I would swap them for free videos so he could come in and get what he wanted. And I got my Nitro and Raw every week for free. So it was a great deal for me.
Oh,
not so much the video store, yeah. But a great deal for me.
And that was the thing that I suppose, I mean, you know, small plug, but that's the thing I'm loving about the network right now is I didn't get to see much Nitro growing up. I knew it existed, and when the internet sort of became a thing, I knew it was around, and so I sort of knew the characters, but I never saw really much Nitro or their pay-per-views. And so then being able to go back and watch all of that, like that's been part of my, you know, obsession right now is just watching old Raws, old Nitros and stuff like that. And seeing all of these moments that I've heard about so much, I knew about so much as a kid growing up and going, oh, that's what happened. And it's like, and you know the ending anyway, but you still sort of lose yourself in Sting dropping from the ceiling and stuff like that. You lose yourself in, you know, I still get goosebumps every time Hulk Hogan turns on Randy Savage at Bash at the Beach 96. Like every time I see it, it's still goosebumps just go down. It's like, it's so cool.
Well, that's the thing. I fell about 91. I fell off WCW because it was just so hard to find. You couldn't, they only released a handful of videotapes that you could buy, and it was just so hard to find. So I'd sort of fallen off them. And then I remember Fox at the time were doing they did the pay-per-views for free. So Bash, I remember watching Bash at the Beach, the Hogan turn for free. And that's what got me back into, because I was over Hogan at the time. I hated him. It was so, to the same turn, I'm like, all right, finally I can actually hate him. That's great.
Oh, that, yeah. And that's the thing, like, you know, that old school wrestler, that mid-90s era, for me, absolutely. And I always encourage, like Kit, I encouraged him, you know, ages ago, watch some WCW Cruiserweight stuff. Mm. Like, you know, you're a small guy, you're doing Cruiserweight. Watch WCW Cruiserweight stuff from, you know, 95 through to 98, because you'll see Cruiserweight stuff, but with real good storytelling. And I mean, Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, like Halloween Havoc match, that just, for me, is, again, one of those matches I'd always heard about. I didn't get to see it until I was much older. And then when I saw it, I'm just like, man, I had to wait 5 years to see this match. Like, I've heard so much about it, and I had to buy it on some like Best of WCW bootleg DVD that I got dodgily somewhere. And you know, but it, you know, that sort of era to me, great characters, great story work, but also huge, like, you know, great matches. And that's what I love. That's why I fell in love, I think, with that era, because you had big over the top characters, but it was still like, wasn't just your Hogan, you know, boot, boot, punch, punch, leg drop, pin. There were still really cool, like, intense matches, and the smaller guys sort of coming up in that era.
Mm. For me, like, one of the things I really like watching on the network now is going back from, like, I think it's like 89 through to 91 of WCW with, like, the Dangerously Alliance and all of that sort of stuff. I love that. That stuff. Until Hogan rocks up, WCW I really loved. And then when Hogan rocked up from that, so I could take a break for that for a while, because I know it's just him and Fader, and then him and Flair, and then him and Savage. It's the same thing that had been happening for years. But until then, with Sting and Luger and Barry Windham, and that stuff is brilliant.
And that's it. Like, it's that sort of, that early WCW, I think, gets sort of whitewashed, because, you know, as any sort of wrestling fan or nerd knows, like, yeah, there was, like, the storylines weren't always the best, and the back office and all that sort of stuff wasn't always the best. But, like, you know, I watched Vader Cactus Jack in a hardcore death match.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is 1992, 1993, and you're just like, this is just brutal.
And it wouldn't have been long
Vader
after Eddie's
pummeling.
Yeah, and it wouldn't have been long after Eddie's ear ripped off, probably, with Foley.
No, I don't reckon it was. I reckon, yeah, it was in that time frame. Mm. And it's like the matches themselves, like the in-ring product was still so good. It just, everything else, unfortunately, for WCW was, and I think that's why that sort of era gets glossed over, is that the you know, everything else was a bit meh, but the actual matches, you go back, like you said, the Dangerous Alliance, some of Flair's matches he was having in that era were just off the chart. You know, that was the era where Ric Flair could wrestle a broomstick and, you know, sell out the joint. Highly encourage anybody listening to this, go back, watch some early WCW. You will not regret it. Forget the storylines, just watch the matches.
You watch some of the storylines, like the whole stuff. I really did like the lead up to Sting and Luger, when Sting kept giving, Luger kept giving him the present.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. That I really did enjoy, to be honest with you. So, let's move into, I suppose we can't do any type of show nowadays without talking about COVID-19 or the coronavirus stuff. How have you been handling the break? Because I know that you, along with me, are big advocates for mental health and men's, for me especially, men's mental health, talking to people. How have you handled this?
It's been, obviously, as for everybody, it's been such a change in just normal life and behavior. I'm very fortunate that I'm still working. So that's just a sense of normality, I suppose, that I get to keep getting up every morning, having my coffee and going to work. But at the same time, I've had plenty of people message me about this. And I suppose for me, I'm trying to stay as normal as possible. And yes, I'm not wrestling, which is, you know, it breaks my heart, to not be there with the guys. But, you know, I'm coming home, I'm working out, I'm sort of, you know, doing that still, you know, not letting my body get soft or anything like that. So still lifting weights and doing my basic cardio as best as I can. We're very lucky. We're doing a Zoom conference with a bunch of us. And the very first one we logged into was, again, almost heartbreaking. You see all the guys for the first time. It was only about 2 weeks. And it was just like, oh my God, like you don't realize how much you miss the interaction with those guys and just the banter and everything. But yeah, for me, like I said, personally, and it is tough. I live by myself. So it can be tough. Easter was a very tough time for me, a little bit emotionally, because, you know, you're sort of sitting there by yourself and, well, I can't go anywhere. I can't go out and have a barbecue with my family and friends because of what's going on. But I think the big thing is I'm just staying positive, you know. I'm allowing myself, and again, I encourage this to anybody, and I'm sure you'd feel the same. If you do get those emotions welling up, just allow yourself to cry. You know, I've had a good cry a couple of times where you just sort of, you know, sitting there and you're going through the motions and you know, everything wells up and you have that release of emotion. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a perfectly natural reaction. And just because we're big burly blokes doesn't mean we don't have feelings. But yeah, it's a tough one. And I do a lot of work with you know, youth groups and young lads. And I've had plenty of young lads that are just really unable to process it. You know, it's nothing that anyone, you know, apart from 0.1% of the population that maybe were alive, you know, 100 years ago, have ever faced.
Yeah.
So it's such a weird situation. And yeah, so anybody that's feeling, you know, that, oh my God, like, I just don't know, you know, and people losing their jobs, and, you know, I'm not allowed to go, you know, I'm very conscious about seeing my family, like, especially my parents. Both my parents are over 60. So I'm very self-conscious about going to see them, because I want to make sure I'm keeping that distance and all that sort of stuff. Cause, you know, God forbid that they get sick, you know, I don't want to be the one thinking, oh my God, was that me? You know, was that somebody else? Or, but yeah, it's a strange time. And all I can say is anybody that needs support or help, there's 1,000 different channels and lifelines, but the best thing I can always recommend is just that close personal confidant. And I'm lucky to have a bag full with me that I can just reach out to and message and just say, hey, I'm not feeling the best. You know, and you just reach out and you just let people know that you're not coping. And I would say the person that you're going to say that to, they're not going to be the sort of person that just goes, oh yeah, cool, no worries. If you feel that strongly about your relationship with that person, they're not going to want to hear that. And they're going to want to help you to get climb out of that sort of that dark space.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the way, and sort of like, I was thinking about it this past weekend because of the Easter and all. I can't imagine what it was like back in the 1918 when it happened with the Spanish flu. They didn't have Zoom. They didn't have any of this. Like, you couldn't sit at home and just watch TV or watch 1,000 movies. They didn't have any of that. They had a radio. And that's all they had. So, like, when I look at it like that, I think we are so lucky to be able to at least have this, where we can have human contact, but, like, just at least some conversation between people. And I know, like, personally, I'm the same as you. I get to get up and I get to go to work every day, and I'm grateful that I get to do that. But my wife and I work together, and she's been sent home from the office. So for the last, probably a month now, the only places she's been in the last month is to Coles for 10 minutes to pick up the groceries and then come home. And I don't know how that would affect me if that was me doing that. I have no idea, because I know for the first 2 weeks I suffered, being that I couldn't go out anywhere. I couldn't do wrestling. I couldn't plan anything. I had nothing to produce. And that's basically why this is happening now, is because I've got the time. And it gets somewhat sane.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. And I think the big thing for anybody, depending on, no matter what your situation is, you just got to keep yourself busy and keep yourself, like you said, keep yourself sane. Don't just... whilst it's great, like you said, it's great that we can, binge watch TV shows and movies and all that sort of stuff, but make sure you keep yourself active. And I went out and bought a whole bunch of puzzles. And I've got two puzzles on the go, one on my dining room table and one on my coffee table, just as a, sit there for half an hour and just start to do the puzzle. And, then, okay, after half an hour, cool, I'll do that again tomorrow. You just keep yourself engaged and keep yourself moving. And yeah, like you said, we're in such a beautifully wonderful technological age that we can text each other and call each other. And that's all it takes. All it takes is a text message. Hey, man, how you doing? Like, is everything okay? You just can connect and just touch base with everybody. And if somebody's not okay, cool. Like, do you want to have a phone call? And me and a friend of mine, we caught up for social distancing beers, where we basically that one end of his yard from each other and had an esky in the middle, and all right, I'm coming to get a beer now, so stay there. All right, grab it, and I'll walk back and sit down, and okay, you can get a beer now. But that sort of thing as well, you just got to get a bit creative with how you can interact. I know each state's different, and each everyone's got their own legislations and stuff, but that's what you got to do. You got to get creative, and you just got to get use all this beautiful stuff that we have to our advantage. I've never known, put it this way, I've never known my mum to be so good on her phone or social media before until she was forced to. So
yeah,
if she can do it, anybody can. Love you, mum.
All right. It has been great having you on, mate. I love having the chat to you, and we'll definitely have to get you on again some other time. We'll catch up again for another chat. For people at home that haven't seen you work, what's one of your favorite matches, maybe, that if you want someone to see it, what would it be that would describe your character?
Look up on YouTube, RCW Live 54, Danger Zone. And there's an awesome match. It's Fists and Flips. So myself and Kit Condor versus the Pereira, Eli Theseus and Gabriel Eros. And it's my most recent match, but it's probably, from a recent standpoint, one of my more favorite matches, just from a things starting to click for me, and new moves and all of that sort of stuff, and things starting to click. Like I said, it's a face match for me, but I feel my intensity's up there. So yeah, if you want to have a look at the match, look at that one. By all means, you can go all the way back to RCW 200 and see my second match ever, and are very unprepared, which is why I'm a little bit bloated and non-tanned against Tony Toro. Had 5 minutes or 15 minutes to prepare for that one. That's a long story for another time. it's a good one, though. You can have a look at that match, and then you can go all the way back to RCW Live 54, and you can sort of see pretty much the full progression of Jensen Hunt, as well as watching my hair grow out, I suppose. So,
some of us don't have that choice anymore, mate.
But yeah, RCW Live 54, check it out.
Okay, and if they want to follow you on your socials, how can I do that?
So Instagram and Twitter is Jensen Hunt PW, or at Jensen Hunt PW, and Facebook is Jensen Hunt RCW. So yeah, check it out. I'm much more active on my Instagram than anything else, and everything kind of gets shared onto everything else from there. But yeah, Jensen Hunt PW on Instagram.
Awesome. Jensen Hunt, thank you very much for coming on, mate.
Thank you very much, Todd, and look forward to speaking to you soon.
Big thanks to my guest, Jensen, for coming on. Do follow him on socials, especially Instagram. Puts up some great content when it comes to those memes that you saw flashing up on the screen. And if you didn't see them because you're listening to the podcast, go and check out his Instagram anyway, and you will see what we were talking about. If you do like Wrestle Radio Australia, please subscribe to us. We're on Spotify. Of course, we're on YouTube because you'd be watching it now if you're watching it. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Libsyn, anywhere you get your podcast from, that's where you can do that. If you do see or hear one of these shows and you want to give us a review, please do. 5 stars helps us get outside and reach out to more people around the world and around the country, because that's what we want to do. We want to spread the word about professional wrestling in Australia. If you want to support the local industry, also follow us on Facebook. It's easy to do. Just look up Wrestle Radio Australia. On Twitter, we are at Wrestle Radio AU, and also on Instagram at that same tag. I personally am at Beast Eastman on Twitter. I'm something else on Instagram. But if you hit Wrestle Radio Australia's Instagram, I think my tag's on there, so you'll be able to follow me. Why you would, I have no idea. Anyway. If you do want to support the local industry, and you know I really do encourage that, please go and support their streaming sites. There's some stuff on there for free, of course. There's a lot of stuff up on the MCW YouTube for free. But go and subscribe to their streaming service. Also, Riot City Wrestling have all of their gear up on YouTube, so go and check them out, the full shows, etc. PCW have got a streaming online. Pro Wrestling Australia have OVO. Go and subscribe to that. Australian Wrestling League, the one that I work with up here in Queensland. We have a YouTube channel, plenty of stuff getting put up on there, especially now that we've got a lot of downtime, so we had a lot of time to go through some of the old AWA Grindhouse stuff, and we've been putting some of that stuff up, so look up for that. We'll look out for that in the coming weeks. But if you want to support the wrestlers on their own, like here, good old strong wrestling shirt, go and check out wrestlemerch.com, because a lot of their stuff is getting put up. A lot of Australian wrestling stuff or Australian wrestlers and promotion stuff are getting put up on that site for sale. So it's Australian shipping. It's a lot cheaper. You're supporting the guys, you're supporting the girls and guys that are out there trying to just get by until we all get back up on our feet and running shows again around the country. Also, if you do want to, Wrestle Radio Australia, we have a stuff on Redbubble. It's easy. You just go to redbubble.com, type in Wrestle Radio Australia in the search engine, they'll come up. Anything that we make from that, the profits don't go to me. They go to two charities that I really do like supporting. That is Beyond Blue and Gotcha for Life. They help out with mental issues. Gotcha for Life especially help out with men's health and teaching boys to be men, to be able to talk about their feelings and talk about their problems so they don't build up and they don't create bigger problems in the future for them. And basically, because in this time is especially hard for everybody with the social isolation and the lockdown and just the amount of time, free time now we have on our hands because there's no more real social stuff to do. that stuff can really weigh down on people and really get on their feelings, and then they can get in their feelings. So it's good to talk to people. If you can't talk to a mate, please go and talk to Lifeline or just reach out for help, because that is the main thing. Talking about these issues is always better, because it always makes you feel better afterwards when you've got something off your chest. And I really do think that's very, very important in nowadays, especially with what we're going through. That would be it for this episode of WrestleRate Australia. Next episode, hopefully coming up next week, I'll be catching up with Riot City Wrestling champion Rocky Monero. So I'm pretty sure we're going to end up getting cancelled by the end of that. So enjoy. So until next time, this is Todd Eastman, WrestleRate Australia. See you next week.